Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings, buy one get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties, buy two get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
What's up? Welcome in Grant and Danny with you on the fan, taking you all the way up to 6:30 on this, the 2nd of January, 2025. Danny, how was the new year?
Boys are back together for the first time in a minute, my friend. I feel like I haven't seen you in a month, but it's all good. Happy New Year. Merry everything. Hope all is well. We did a pretty good job. We did a huge, big, major New Year's Eve event. I'm kidding. It was 100 yards from our front door. Everyone was home by 10:45. The only reason we weren't asleep is there were fireworks in the neighborhood, which I did not love. But, you know, we did a pretty low-key, pretty chill.
We did it about as big as we do New Year's Eve at this point in our lives, which is to say that the wife and I went out to dinner. We got...
Oh, very nice.
My parents came up. They were actually flying to Florida. They're going on a little cruise. So they stayed overnight right by the airport. Mm-hmm. I drove them to National at 6 a.m. on January 1st. But because we had them there, they did a little celebration, watched the ball drop at like 7:45. You know, that's when you start counting down. The kids went ham sandwich like it was midnight.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And they were in bed soon thereafter. But we went out to Randy's, got a nice steak, enjoyed ourselves over in Tyson's, got home in time. And then my wife didn't even try to stay up. She just went right to bed.
Yeah.
I think she's 0-4 New Year's Eve at midnight since we've had kids. Beforehand, we would go out, we'd paint the town red, we'd have a good old time.
Sure.
Not anymore.
Yeah, not these days.
So it was me, my mom, and my dad on the couch kind of watching the ball drop, which was nice. First time I've been with them years and years on New Year's Eve. And then they were off to the airport in the morning.
Whoever came up with the, let's just make a countdown that you could put on YouTube or whatever for kids at New Year's parties, genius. Nobel Peace Prize, please. Because now, the older kids knew, but they didn't say anything. It's like a Santa Claus situation. The younger kids were going, as you say, ham sandwich. They're like, we're up here at midnight. It was like 8:45. We're just like, okay, it's pretty much time to start rounding things up. Let's put the YouTube video on with a one-minute countdown. They didn't know the difference, and it was great.
I know it's become in vogue to say this, and it's now almost cliche to not be a New Year's Eve guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what it is really there's an age gap on it. I think if you're young, partying age, New Year's Eve's a pretty good holiday still.
Yeah.
When you get to a point, though, where you're just inconvenienced by a lot of people, it's overrated.
Yeah, whatever age that is, it happens to others younger than others.
I think it's upper 20s, right. Honestly, mm-hmm. If I had to guess as to when it happens. But there's just something to be said for if I have to stand around and wait for drinks, if I have to see other people being really drunk, like, you just get to a point where that's less fun. I'm still team New Year's Eve party at someone's house, especially now, like families getting together, like it sounds like what you're doing in your neighborhood or whatever. I'll do that till the cows come home. But the going out, I think I can comfortably say I will not be anywhere in public at midnight on New Year's Eve ever again.
Well, I had enough of those, like you touch the hot pot and you get burned things, where it's like, all right, you pay $185, you get, you know, all you can drink, rail drinks and this, that, and the other thing, and it's like, that time is so terrible, and you commit early or you don't commit, and like, what's everyone doing? Okay, me and a couple guys are doing this. Well, 17 other people are doing that, and you never get together, and it's always overrated. It's always a hassle. It's never as much fun as it was supposed to be. It's always brutal. I'm not getting burned anymore. I'm not wasting all of this money on something that's not that awesome. So I was basically, I don't want to say I was an innovator. I don't want to say I was ahead of the curve, but I was. among my group of dude bros, like among my buddies that I grew up with who still like, they liked fun. I was the first person to be like, you guys are missing it. This is not fun. This sucks. It's the most overrated day of the year. It's up there with St. Paddy's Day.
We owe the Commanders a congratulations.
There we go.
To kick off 2025, not just because of their first 11-win season since 1991.
Okay.
Not just because they are playoff bound. Not just because Jaden Daniels is going to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year. Not just because Adam Peters might win Executive of the Year. Not just because Dan Quinn might win Coach of the Year. Not just because the Harris Ownership Group is the greatest ownership group in this organization's history, not named Dan Snyder. Post-Dan Snyder.
There you go.
How about, no.
I know what you mean.
Go back.
Yeah, try it again.
Dan Snyder sucked.
There you go.
These guys don't.
There it is.
How about that?
Yeah.
The point of the dude's story is, Danny, we found out today the local 53 might send as many as 11 guys to the Pro Bowl.
Not the Amateur Bowl. That's the Pro Bowl.
That's a wackadoo. Now, they're not going to because a lot of these guys are deep alternates, but we got two official Pro Bowlers. We'll start with that. Jaden Daniels, clap it up. Primary quarterback for the NFC. First Pro Bowl selection. First rookie QB for Washington since 2012 with Robert Griffin. Griffin, Cousins, Brad Johnson, Gus Frat, Mark Rippon, Jay Schrader, Joe Theismann, Billy Kilmer, Sonny Jurgensen, Norm Snead, Eddie LeBaron. That's the list since the mid-50s. And now Jaden Daniels joins it. And Terry McLaurin,
boys and girls,
back to the Pro Bowl for the second time in his career. He joins a very short list, Daniel Rouye, of wide receivers to go twice in burgundy and gold. Gary Clark, Art Monk, Charlie Brown, and Charlie Taylor.
Yeah, sorry about that company.
And now Terry McLaurin.
So real quick on the quarterback part of it. There are certain years, like, and again, this sounds like I'm just picking on a dude for no reason, but like the year Chase Young won Defensive Rookie of the Year, it was not a particularly thriving class full of a bunch of juggernauts where I go, wow, you won it in a standout class. You still won it. You deserve credit for it.
You remember who the runner-up was? Pretty sure.
Jeremy Chinn?
I think it was Jeremy
Chinn. Yeah, it was Jeremy Chinn.
Current commander safety slash baller Jeremy Chinn.
So there's certain years where it's like, oh my God, this is actually one of those years where quarterback, it's a huge deal. Baker Mayfield has had an unbelievable season. Like, don't look now, but Baker Mayfield is second in these National Football League leagues right here with 39 touchdowns. He's having an unbelievable season for a team that was beset by injuries, carrying people without Chris Godwin, without Mike Evans. Unbelievable year, not a Pro Bowler because Jaden Daniels is. The NFC's deep, as is the AFC. We've got a pretty good cast of quarterbacks, and Daniels is deserving. A lot of other guys are deserved too. I'm sure in Tampa they're doing a Baker got job because of the Daniels hype or whatever. Who cares? But the fact is, it's not just some, well, someone's got to go. We'll pick a guy with 16 touchdowns and four picks who's played 10 games because we need a healthy body. This is a good class, and he made it.
No, it's a good point. Sometimes there are more deserving players for spots than there are spots.
Mm-hmm.
There are also going to be years where there are fewer deserving players for spots. This is not one of those years. But for McLaurin, who is going to break the team's touchdown record if he can catch one in Los Angeles in Week 18, as far as scores by a receiver, he is very deserving as well. 74 catches for 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns already. But what's amazing, in addition to having two offensive players for the first time since Scherff and Trent Williams went back in 2017, in addition to having a quarterback and a receiver go together for the first time since Rippon and Clark went back in 1991.
Yeah.
They've got 9 legitimate alternates and 11 total alternates. And what I'm using to classify legitimate is first, second, or third alternate. So Bobby Wagner may very well end up in the Pro Bowl. He's a first alternate. Long snapper Tyler Ott, first alternate. Special teams ace Nick Ballor, first alternate. All three of those guys could go. So it is reasonable, Danny, that they could have 5 Pro Bowlers.
Mm-hmm.
As far as second alternates go, they've got 3 of those. Tyler Biadasz at center, Frankie Louvu at linebacker, and Tress Way. So you could add another 2 there, maybe 7 Pro Bowlers, 8 Pro Bowlers now. Third alternates include Austin Eckler as a kick returner, Dante Fowler, who has 10.5 sacks as an edge rusher. What a year for him. Jeremy Reeves, their special teams ace over the years, all third alternates. And then both Jeremy Chinn and Zach Ertz are 5th alternates. I can't imagine it goes much further than that.
Right.
That's a lot of alternates, if I'm being honest. But 11 total for a team last year that did not have a single Pro Bowler, to have two legitimate already in Pro Bowlers, another three first alternates, another three second alternates, another three third alternates. Take a bow, Adam Peters.
That's what it is, right? I mean,
and all but three of the 11 guys, on, oh, I guess 13 total with the two guys in, all but three of them, Danny, are new here via Peters' addition.
Yeah, Dan Quinn as well, right? Just in terms of getting buy-in. Some of the guys are holdovers, like McLaurin is, of course, and you know, Jeremy Reeves and Tress Way, but I think you're 100% right. It's, I mean, think of the Dante Fowler fund. We talk about it every once in a while, like, hey, how cool is this? He is 10th in the NFL in sacks. And that's with early on this season. He was just sort of a rotational pass rusher, right? I mean, wasn't getting the reps, wasn't getting all the looks. And over time, it's like, hey, this guy's pretty good. He's probably better than anybody else you've got at getting after the quarterback and being disruptive. I mean, he's, you know, hitting QBs illegally a couple different times, where whether you agree or don't agree, the point is he's beating his guy. He's in the space of the QB, head contact or late hit, this, that, and the other. But he's been really, really good for this team. He's up there with, you know, Will Anderson and T.J. Watt. I mean, he's a sack behind T.J. Watt, for goodness sakes, over the course of the season. I know sacks aren't the end-all be-all, but it's a pretty good metric for who's doing what in the pass rush game. He's been outstanding for them, and he's making punter money. Pretty unbelievable, man.
This is his ninth NFL season, and he has played with five teams.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in Jacksonville, Dallas, Atlanta, the L.A. Rams, and here. And he's only had 1 year similar to this one, ever. And it was that one monster 11.5 sack season he had with the Rams when he had 16 hits on the quarterback. This year, 10.5 sacks, 14 TFLs, 12 quarterback hits. Every single number as a pass rusher, you know, in terms of the counting stats, he's posted second best of 9 tries in his NFL career. Pretty amazing. And you're right. I think not only Dan Quinn, but Ryan Kerrigan, the entire defensive staff, like Darrell Tapp, all of those guys deserve credit, because it's not just about acquiring the player, Peters, Newmark, front office. It's about then making it work, making it fit. Joe Witt, the defensive staff, getting them to trust you. And I think you said buy-in. I think that's right.
Yeah, what can you do? Everybody always focuses in terms of scouting. I always give the Ravens a ton of credit on this. Where you go, well, that guy can't do this, or he doesn't fit that. Well, what can he do? And if you're going to pay somebody not that much money, right, then you don't really care about the limitations. If you're going to pay someone $25-30 million bucks, they better be able to fit any scheme that year, the next year, or beyond. But if you're paying somebody off the scrap heap, with all due respect to Fowler, readily available for anybody to sign, if someone had offered him $8 million bucks, he would have just gone there, right? But nobody really was that interested. You figure out, what can that guy do, and how can I use that, and is that worthwhile to me? Those kind of signings are happening here now, whereas it's not really commonplace over the last couple of decades here in Washington.
Speaking of meritorious coaches, how about Cliff Kingsbury?
Cliffy.
And the job that Clifford has done this season. Cliff Kingsbury is now getting talked about all over the NFL as one of the top assistant coaches in the National Football League in 2024, and as a legitimate head coaching candidate again going into 2025. I don't know that anybody in the building is more of a unsung hero than Kingsbury, which isn't to try to take anything away from Jaden Daniels, who's been marvelous, but the scheme offensively, short on weaponry, specifically at wide receiver, has worked. Guys like Olamide Zaccheaus, 3 touchdowns, 1 called back in the last 2 weeks. Dyami Brown, Jamison Crowder, who's on his 9th life like a cat in this league. Like, these guys are making big plays and getting open, and it's not like they're getting better deeper into careers where they've mostly been unproductive. Kingsbury is a huge, huge reason for Daniels' success, this team's success this year. And it actually came up today for the first time at his press conference out in Ashburn that maybe he's going to be a head coach again. But the rumors swirling have largely been that he might just like being an OC. He doesn't really enjoy doing media outside of his once a week press conference. Maybe he's a guy that just wants to be a coordinator. I would say that his answers today will put some of those rumors to bed once and for all.
Do you want to be a head coach again?
Yeah, I'm sure at some point. Yeah, at some point.
Do you plan to interview for jobs this year?
I won't comment on that, but we'll see how everything plays out, but I'm very happy here. Yeah, this has been an awesome, awesome place, and has really helped me kind of rekindle my love for the sport.
And last one, but what did you learn from your first stint? What would you be looking for?
Yeah, I think the first one, I didn't know what I didn't know, really. Coming from college, I bounced around on teams as a player, but not as a coach on any level. And so to come in there, I don't think I set the foundation the way I would do it after watching DQ and how he set the foundation from day one. And it was, these are the standards. This is what we won't compromise. This is what we're going to be. I definitely could have done a better job of that. And kind of once you don't lay it out like that, it's hard to put it back in. You know, it's hard to kind of reset it. And I think that's where he's done such a great job. It's like, this is what we're going to be from day one. There was no ifs, ands, or buts, and the guys bought in. And you know, he's led in an incredible way by doing that.
Cliff Kingsbury from about 2 hours ago earlier today. What's your lead takeaway from that exchange?
He wants to be a head coach again, and I think that was eyes wide open, right? When Washington was interviewing him or wanted to potentially hire him, or you go with a defensive-minded head coach that's leader of men type, as Quinn is, this is, want to call it the risk, or this is part and parcel, whatever phrase you want to use, this is sort of the necessary drawback as part of that, right? You have an OC that's successful, he's going to be in demand. So that's going to happen. And we kind of said, if it goes really well, he'll be in demand. It's gone really well, he's in demand. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. The let's have him be like Ben Johnson and on a wish and a prayer, have him sacrifice a whole bunch of millions of dollars for these alphas that want their system and their design to work at the highest level. Let's just make it that this unique unicorn that's turned down jobs for multiple years, it'll be like Cliff Kingsbury. No, he's going to be head coach again at some point. I don't know if it's this year, next year, or whatever, but that's certainly something he wants to do. I always kind of thought that was obvious.
Yeah, he wants to coach, is clearly the lead. Did not answer if he's going to interview in this cycle, although there is a report from Jeremy Fowler of ESPN today that Kingsbury is expected to interview for the Bears job, that there's at least interest in Cliff Kingsbury. From Chicago, shouldn't be overly surprising. He worked with Caleb Williams collegiately. I loved his last answer, though, there. I actually thought that was really telling, both as an endorsement of Dan Quinn and the operation he's run this year, but also for Kingsbury and what he's learned.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you be better just by watching Quinn establish a foundation? Whatever you say on day one, you better stick to those guns, man. And to me, it seemed like he thought maybe he let the players walk over him a little bit as time went on in Arizona, which was one of the knocks, by the way, is that there wasn't enough discipline, that they didn't stick to the script, that guys could show up late for a practice or skip a work day or whatever it was,
right,
and feel like they could get away with it. Whereas it sounds like that accountability that's been established here under Dan Quinn is something that he really, really likes. But I also loved the awkwardness of the start of his answer.
Yeah, it's so good.
You know he was prepared for the question. If you haven't seen the video, go check my Twitter. I tweeted the video out. It's at Grant H. Paulson. It's actually hilarious. It's better than just the audio where he does like almost this shaky voice, like holding back a laugh. And then he's like, yeah, I want to be a coach again. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
But the pause beforehand, uh-huh, and the how do I want to deal with this?
Fidgeting a little bit.
Do I want to lie? And he's like literally shaking his shoulders as he's talking. It was very funny.
Yeah, I'm sure at some point. Yeah, at some point.
We got two at some points.
Yep.
I mean, an answer has not been that uneasy since my wife last asked me if I would stop eating ice cream each night after she goes
at
to bed.
Some point.
Like, Grant, are you ever going to stop eating any ice cream after I go to bed?
Yeah, I'm sure at some point. Yeah, at some point.
You haven't folded your laundry. Are you going to fold your laundry?
Yeah, I'm sure at some point. Yeah, at some point.
Danny, yeah. I have been telling you for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
You got to get the trash out on Tuesdays.
Right.
Are you going to take the trash out?
Yeah, I'm sure at some point. Yeah, at some point.
The two at some point.
The second some point is perfect.
It's
like, the second point.
I want everyone to know I'm not saying imminently.
I don't mean now.
I don't mean I'm going to take a head coaching job right now, this second. Maybe in an hour. What at some point could be in an hour. It could be in a
20
week.
Years. That's
could,
a point.
Could be in 5 years.
Yeah.
He also was very clear to say, I really love it here. But if he didn't want to be a coach again, he could have said, hey, I kind of enjoy what I'm doing. This is less stressful. He did not say that. If he wanted to not get interviews or take interviews, mm-hmm, this offseason, this was your opportunity to kind of send that message. Instead, he put the sign up right in front of him at the press conference. It said, open for business.
Yeah.
Call my agent. He's waiting by his phone.
1-800 at some point, right, is how you can reach me. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. There's no downside. I call this the John Gruden playbook. I think his agent, whoever he is, was so brilliant at this. While Gruden is doing TV, doesn't have to say anything other than just he would do TV. He loves what he's doing.
It's Eric Burkhart, by the way.
Yeah, Eric Burkhart's a genius.
Baker Mayfield and a bunch of players.
Yeah, so he's great. He was great at this. There's all sorts of rumblings and demand. There's always demand for John Gruden. And then eventually got to pick his deal. And it was 10 years, $100 million, just this outrageous thing, just by creating demand. You learn from that if you're a coach watching. It's never bad to create demand for yourself. Even if you're very happy and you want to stay put. Demand is created. Maybe you get a raise. Maybe you get a better parking spot. I mean, there's a million things that can happen. It's never bad to have people want you.
Let's talk about one of Cliff Kingsbury's best friends next. Sean McVay. He has decided that his Rams will not play starters this weekend. Matthew Stafford, among the veterans, they're going to sit. If they lose and the Bucs win, the Rams would slide below Tampa Bay in the seeding, and Washington would no longer be going to the Rams in an opening round playoff game. They'd go back to Tampa Bay, where they opened their regular season to open the postseason. Who would you rather the Commanders play if they beat Dallas this weekend, the Rams or the Bucs? We'll get into that next on Grant and Danny.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Absolutely amazing to think that we're already entering the final week of the NFL season, but here we are. No Thursday night football tonight. We will have a college game. Notre Dame and Georgia are playing in New Orleans at the Superdome. And we should say, by the way, we're thinking about all of the family members and loved ones affected by the tragedy in New Orleans that took place on New Year's Eve night. We were just there. What an amazing town. We were on Bourbon Street. We ate in a restaurant right where that truck came screaming down the street. And so it hits even a little closer to home for us. I was talking to Christian, our buddy who lives there and runs Brennan's, yesterday. But that is a resilient city. They will get back on their feet. But my goodness, is it just an awful thing. I saw there was a former college football player at Yale who died in the tragedy. We got an email from our boss here at Odyssey. We lost a member of our Odyssey team, I believe, right, in New York, a young kid who was there celebrating. Just senseless and horrendous.
Well said. Yeah, it's unfathomable, right? The you just kind of go, I don't know what you're supposed to say. There's no, any words are trivial in comparison to that, right? Which is everybody having the best time you can have, right? Having as much fun as possible and all ripped away.
And speaking of trivial, talking about football, right?
Sure, but
This is what we do. We are your reprieve. The way you and I view this thing is we are your chance to get away from it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to do. We serve steak. It's a steakhouse, so we're going to keep serving steak and not opine about other things. But that game is being played in New Orleans at the Superdome tonight. This afternoon, I guess, and we will certainly break it down before it kicks off the college football playoffs ongoing. But Saturday, doubleheader, AFC North games, Browns, Ravens, Bengals, Steelers, and then full slate of games on Sunday, including game 272 to end the season, the Vikings and the Lions. By the way, I saw this last night. That Detroit-Minnesota game, the end of the season, first time in history two teams with 13 or more wins will meet in the regular season. The 28 combined wins between the two teams, winner gets the one seed. They're vying for the top spot in the conference. Most ever in a regular season game. The Lions are trying to go back-to-back in the division as champions for the first time since 1970. The Vikings are trying to win the division for the second time in 3 years, and they're looking for a 15-win season for just the second time ever.
Just incredible.
They did it, remember, in 1998. That was like the Brian Billick-led 500
record-setting offense, yeah.
Yeah, was that a
Moss and Chris Carter and Randall Cunningham.
Cunningham. I was thinking Moon. It was Cunningham as a quarterback. That offense was the best.
They were so good.
Robert Smith, I think, their running back.
Just like a casual 1,200 yards, double-digit touchdowns as an afterthought. They were a juggernaut. The fact that there's an extra game now, this was bound to happen. But still, it's pretty remarkable. You get two 14-win teams duking it out. I remember there was like the marquee matchup of my youth. there was like, I remember there was a loss between them, maybe two undefeated teams late in the season with San Francisco and the Giants. This must see like heavyweight battle. And neither of them were 14-1, you know, or whatever, it's 14-2, I guess.
Right.
Just incredible that two teams that good in the same division, by the way, which means you never slip up anywhere else, right? Just between the two of you, that's it. There's no missteps to get to that point.
So incredible. The previous record I saw for the most wins combined between two teams to play in a regular season game was 25 before these two will meet with 28. And that was the 15-0 Patriots and the 10-win Giants in week 17.
Well, there you go.
Of the year where New England went 16-0, and then eventually, like a month later, the Giants beat them in the Super Bowl to derail their perfect season.
Yeah.
But that was the previous record, was a fifth, because a team was going literally 16-0.
That's what it took, yeah.
For the first time since the Miami Dolphins in 1972 at the time. But the reason we wanted to get into Week 18 here was the decision the Rams are making to sit their starters, including their quarterback, Matthew Stafford. The Rams will turn their offense over to Jimmy Garoppolo. They play the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle, nothing to play for, but it is a division matchup. They're going to give it what they got. The game is in Seattle, which is a really tough place to go win anyway. The Rams, having won five straight games, have already now clinched, and they are in as division champions. I'm pretty surprised, though, Sean McVay is not prioritizing their future matchup. Because if they lose and slide down in the standings, they're going to play the loser of the Vikings-Lions game. Meaning, he is choosing a potential loss this weekend and a meeting with, say, Detroit over standing pat and welcoming Washington to L.A. Now, if you're a Commanders fan, maybe you drape yourself in that burgundy and gold flag and you say, he's afraid of us. It seems to me, though, that it's not that as much as he's not really worried or considering who they're going to play in that seating as much as he wants to give himself his best possible chance to be healthy. And this is a guy that doesn't play his starters at all in the preseason.
Literally where I was going to go. I mean, to me, that's the story, right? I talk about this all the time, but when you go play blackjack, there's a book, there's a rule. Like the way that you're supposed to play, it's the most consistent. If you deviate from that sometimes because you got a feeling, you're more likely to lose. This is his approach. This is who he is all the time. Right. So the way Dan Campbell goes for every fourth down, even, you know, or we're going for two, even if you're backed up to the 50, he's like, we're still going for two. Like, that's it. This is who Sean McVay is, though, especially with a veteran team. Right. I mean, Matt Stafford is up there at this point. Puka Nacua has been off injured. Cooper Kupp's been off injured. The key cogs for them, a lot of mileage on Kyron Williams' legs, that could go all day. This is who he's been. So this is more one of those like, we're facing internally, thinking about our best chance to have a successful playoff run is rested guys in this long grind of a season where we had to rip off. We're basically playing glorified playoff games the last month and a half. They were 5-6. Again, they did the same thing they did last year where they started off poorly, kind of standing eight count in the ring, then ripped off a bunch of wins. Their marquee one, of course, is that thriller against the Bills when the Bills came out there at LA, that 44-42 game that was incredible. But they've won five straight. Then everything they've had to do to kind of get themselves into this position, it's almost like here's your carrot, here's your reward for that, and prioritizing health over maybe some rhythm heading into the postseason. But he's consistent.
If they lose and they slide, a Commanders win over the Cowboys would likely mean they then play the Bucks. Mm-hmm. Because with the postseason on the line, it's hard to imagine Tampa Bay not beating New Orleans this weekend in a 1 o'clock kickoff at home. By the way, to get in and win the division, they've got to beat New Orleans anyway. Otherwise, you open the door to Atlanta, who's playing Carolina. And at that point, the Falcons may get in. The Rams would still keep that spot. But let's say, for all intents and purposes, that the Bucs do beat the Saints like they're supposed to. If the Rams, led by Garoppolo, lose to Seattle, and they could still win, but if they're sitting a bunch of starters, it's just more likely than not that they'll lose that football game. Washington goes back to Tampa, where they opened their year, where they got walloped in week one, 37-20, and it was more lopsided than that. If you remember, they got a late touchdown.
Yep.
But they're a different team. And I know the Bucs are a different team, too. That was months ago. But this Commanders group, I would say, Danny, is not a team that's going to show up in Tampa anything like it was that day. That felt like just a continuation of the Ron Rivera season.
Yeah.
Where it was like, God, that was ugly. That was terrible. Jaden Daniels' debut. Remember, his first pass of his career was like 3 yards behind Brian Robinson and bounced on the ground and bounced backwards, and they lost 14 yards on first down to begin the season.
Good start, everybody. Good
job. Do you remember that?
Of course I do, yeah.
That whole game was just a debacle The only thing that went well was Jaden ran all over the place. Mm-hmm. But other than that, they couldn't throw the ball. They couldn't do anything. And Baker Mayfield is on a tear. So I think between Washington being a different team, the Bucs, even without Chris Godwin, has been lost for the year, mm-hmm. kind of getting right offensively. They've won 5 of their last 6. That would be a really fun playoff matchup, just like the Rams game would be.
Yeah, they're averaging 30-something a game here as they've won 5 of 6. Neither team's a pushover. You're leveling up in competition here. There's no soft landing spot.
Well, I mean, look, you got 2 wins against over 500 teams. One was a team that fell to 500 when you beat them this past week in overtime because their kicker missed a field goal that most kickers make. The other was when Kenny Pickett came in. Mm-hmm. But you can't take credit away. You won the 2 straight games against winning teams.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get to the playoffs, you're sure shooting. Of course, you're leveling up.
Yeah, Tampa Bay's won 5 of 6. We mentioned the Rams have won 5 in a row. Well, you know, pending what happens this weekend.
Trying to become the first.
I watched too much Shark Tank over the break.
9 out of 11, by the way, for the Rams.
Yeah.
Sleep on that. They were 1-4. Do you remember that?
Yes. I mean, again, they dig themselves this giant hole. They did it last year, too, and everybody writes them off, including me. And don't look now, but they're kind of doing it. As they get healthier, there they go.
This is Sean McVay's Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
They lost. They were 0-2. They lost to the Lions, and then they got beat by 31 by the Cardinals. They're 0-2.
Remember that?
To your point. Then they beat San Francisco in a game they should not have, but they found a way to win that game. They lose to the Bears and the Packers. And then their bye week. And since then, they are 9-2. They beat the Vikings. You talked about the win over the Bills. They beat the 49ers. They are a tough customer. But the question is, and I think we should open up the phones on this because I'm just fascinated to see how fans would feel. You and I can give our opinions on this next as well. At 800-636-1067, which game is a better matchup for Washington? What should we and what will you guys be rooting for this weekend? Do you think they have a better chance to end a 19-season playoff drought in L.A. against the Rams or in Tampa where their season started against the Bucs out of the NFC South? Because it looks like, assuming they handle their business, they're going to avoid the Eagles, as long as they beat the Cowboys. But assuming they win, do you want to play the Rams or the Bucs, and why? We'll open up the phones. Cannot wait to hear what you guys have to say about this. 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
You know, I think there's a difference, Gary, if you're talking about you're playing for a bye. You know, there's been games, you know, you look at the 18 game when we're playing the Niners at the end. Well, we looked at that as, all right, well, you automatically advance to the division round. That's a little bit different. Fortunately for us, you know, and it was different last year because we had a wild card that seed could end up fluctuating. Here you're talking about either the 3 or the 4 seed. And to us, you know, I think that, you know, you could sit here and try to play all these different things. You know, we got to be ready to go. And somebody's coming in here that's going to be an excellent team that earned an opportunity to be in the postseason. And if you want to.
At Sean McVay talking about his decision yesterday to bench some of his starters, including his starting quarterback, definitely drew the attention of some in the building over in Ashburn. The Commanders don't know who they'll play. They're gunning for the 6 seed. Dan Quinn says they're going to do everything they can to beat the Cowboys. Seeding is important to them. I know that probably for the most homerish of us as fans, we want to think that Sean McVay doesn't want to see Washington, that he'd rather play Detroit with their banged-up defense than the Commanders. And we could tell ourselves that and make us feel good, but really, he's trying to keep his guys healthy. He's getting ready for the playoffs. The question, though, for you right now at 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny is, who do the Commanders have a better chance to beat? They have not won a playoff game since 05. They have a great opportunity to change that coming up next weekend. Who would you rather them play, the Bucs or the Rams? I posted this poll during the break at Grant H. Paulson. About 400 respondents in the first couple of minutes here. 59% of people are saying Washington would have a better chance to beat the Rams than the Bucs.
It's my answer, and it's one of those where I'm doing a Michael Scott cringe gif as I say it, because again, there's no easy road here. They'll be underdogs no matter where they go, especially because you have to go on the road. But to me, it's the Rams, even though they've won 5 straight. To me, it's Tampa's offense is so good that Washington's best chance is, okay, Jaden Daniels be Superman. And that's too much to ask. You can get away with it for a couple of weeks as they're Jaden Daniels and O over the last three games. But I don't know in a playoff game, dude. Like, you got to have something easy. Somebody's got to help you out. And maybe Austin Ekeler coming back could be that thing. But to me, Tampa can score with you, especially since they've let Bucky Irving go and be unleashed instead of, you know, Rashad White sort of sliding around for 3 yards a carry. That dude's a beast. Baker Mayfield's playing the best football of his career. Should be a Pro Bowler. Should be a borderline MVP candidate, to be honest with you, with what's happened in Tampa. That offense, to me, scares me. Averaging 33 a game here over their last six. And there's plenty there. I mean, if you look at the Rams, their one big offensive output over the last month plus was against Buffalo, that epic 44-42 game. And you associate Sean McVay and Matt Stafford and Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp and Kyron Williams and company with great offense, but it's a lot of 20, 21, 12, 19, 13 in their most recent win against Arizona. To me, that bodes a little bit better that they're not flying high on that side of the ball coming into the postseason. I believe in Washington's ability, especially with Daniels playing the way that he is, to move it and score on anybody at some point. That's why it's slightly leaned towards LA for me.
I think they have a better chance of beating the Bucs than the Rams. I feel opposite you. I'd rather play Tampa Bay. My reasoning is I think both quarterbacks are similar in that they'll give you a chance to make some plays on the ball. Baker Mayfield leads the NFL in turnover-worthy plays with 25. Matthew Stafford's in the top four, by the way, with 21, and they have about the same percentage in terms of pass attempts, turnover-worthy plays. Baker Mayfield's made a few fewer big-time throws than Stafford, who's had slightly better year in those numbers. Now, Mayfield, obviously, with 39 touchdowns to go along with his 15 picks, as you said, on a heater, has been incredible, had an amazing season, has established himself now in this second phase of his career as a franchise quarterback, and he deserves all the credit for that. But I think the Rams do the things Washington struggled with defensively better. I am petrified of the possibility of having to deal with Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua with this secondary and these corners right now. It is possible Lattimore's back, but if he isn't, oh my God. Like, what are we talking about? Michael Davis on Puka Nacua? Cooper Kupp? No, thank you. It's not like Mike Evans would be a treat to have to deal
with. Yeah, that's not any fun either.
But the receiver room down the way is just, it's less depth, it's less scary. You have two elite all-pro type wide receivers for the Rams. Not a matchup I like. And they can run the ball with Kyron Williams. Mm-hmm. Washington has not been very good at stopping the run. They're also good in the outside zone game. I think that, as you saw with Atlanta, and Bijan Robinson, is a big deal as well. So, for all of those reasons, most of them, I'm just looking at Washington's defense because I have the confidence in their offense to move the ball against both of those two teams. I would say I would rather play the Bucs than the Rams. It's also easier travel. You don't have to go cross country.
That's true.
I think there's something to that. When you're flying out on a Saturday, playing on a Sunday, I know you're gaining time, not losing it, but it's much easier to stay on your own coast, play on your own time zone. So give me Tampa Bay and a Todd Bowles coach team, respectfully, over the Rams coached by Super Bowl champion Sean McVay. Let's not forget it was just last year in that Detroit-Tampa Bay game when Todd Bowles had a terrible gaffe at the end of the game with timing, if you remember. And it was like an ugly way to finish their season. I just don't think they're quite as well coached from a head coaching standpoint as the Rams are. But let's see what people think. We will start with Cornelius in D.C. Where are you at, Cornelius? What do you think?
Hey, what's up, Grant? What's up, Danny? First of all, thanks for taking the call. Man, I'm with you, Grant. I'd rather play Tampa. And it's kind of a little personal, too, because that first game I actually went down to Tampa. It was so hot down there. And I think the lights was a little bright that day. I would love to play them again. And I don't want to travel cross country. I don't want to deal with Puka or Cooper. And even though Bishop boy, Mayfield having a hell of a year, I still think Stafford is a better quarterback than him, and I like my chances against Tampa because Danny said something about he don't want Jaden being Superman. Well, it's too late. He has arrived. He is him. He is Superman, and I believe the cape ain't coming off. So I would rather play Tampa, man. You know, I like my chances against Tampa.
Thanks, buddy. By the way, Baker Mayfield, the last 3 weeks, 11 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. I mean, he's going into the playoffs on one of those, like you're seeing a baseball, like a beach ball kind of zones that he's in.
I mean, he is on fire. 71.7% completion percentage on the year, 4,300 yards, 39 touchdowns. I mean, it's video game stuff. And he's had to be heroes as or hero type ball as Chris Godwin's been hurt and they have the guys in and out of the lineup. But Bucky Irving, since they, you know, made him instead of a part-time guy, the guy averaging 5.5 a carry. Really, the second half of the year has become the starter, rushed over 1,000 yards, 7 touchdowns. He's a threat everywhere. You know about Mike Evans. You've seen him plenty. There's a Hall of Famer still with plenty left.
That'd be cool to get a Lattimore-Evans matchup.
Yeah, assuming Lattimore's health,
those
right?
Those guys bring that hate up, each other's guts.
Which would be neat to see. Hopefully no personal fouls out of that for Marshon Lattimore. But yeah, I mean, again, there's no easy road here. Every point you made about L.A. is correct. They have all the ingredients. And I guess my point kind of is, so does Tampa. And they've played offensively so great here over the last month plus. But you know the Rams are capable. Just if you're in doubt, see that Bills game. You tell me they can't move the ball.
I'm going to give you one more why I would rather play the Bucs than the Rams. I don't know if you've seen this rookie Jared Verse in the second half of the season.
He hunts passers.
The Florida State defensive end. They got Brandon Fisk on the inside and Verse on the outside, both from the Seminoles defensive front last year. Rushing in tandem now as rookies. They're going to finish probably like the top two in the Defensive Rookie of the Year award, perhaps. Two of the top three anyway. They're both coming in rolling. And I don't like having an edge that can get home against this tackle situation where right now you're on your third right tackle. We'll see what happens this week with the health of some of the guys. Sounds like Wiley's coming back. But the Bucs do not have that. Logan Hall is their best edge rusher. He had 5.5 sacks this year. Now they have two monster D tackles who combined for 13.5 sacks in it. Kalijah Kancey, who's like a future Aaron Donald type out of Pitt, and Vita Vea, who had 6 sacks. So they would torment you from the interior. But I kind of like Jaden seeing it coming and getting out the edges. Mm-hmm. It's when you come from the edges and you force him up the middle, you know, where maybe that becomes the issue with Kancey and Vea. But the lack of an edge rusher to take advantage of Washington's pedestrian play at tackle here recently, that to me helps me see the matchup a little more favorably. And that would be better off playing the Bucs than the Rams as well. 800-636-1067. We'll get more of your thoughts on this. Who are they better off playing? Plus, we should get back into Cliff Kingsbury wanting to be a head coach again. He said as much today. How soon might that happen? You're listening to The Fan.